Hello, this is your Polycast for Thursday, February 9th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, a move to steer more public money to private schools and Democrats push to legalize marijuana. A legislative proposal to increase access to private schools is set for a committee hearing at the State House today. It uses tax credits to help families afford school tuition. Supporters say it's a smart way to increase educational options, but some critics worry about accountability and access. Solveig Wastvedt reports.
I'm standing in front of St. Paul Academy in a quiet residential neighborhood of the city. When Minnesotans think of a private school, something like this might come to mind. A high reputation and high tuition. The sticker price here is over $25,000, although there is financial aid. But the bill's chief author, Ron Kreisha, says the proposal is about more than that.
We're really not just talking about these high-end schools. What we're talking about is all of the schools that are available.
Minnesota has almost 500 private schools serving K-12 students. A survey by Wilder Research for the advocacy group Minnesota Independent School Forum found average tuition at just over $4,000, with high school tuition averaging about $9,500 for the schools surveyed. Kreisha's bill has two parts. In one part, the Little Falls Republican proposes extending an existing tax credit for educational expenses to include school tuition. That credit currently provides the lowest-income families up to $1,000 per child. The other part would attempt to encourage donations for several purposes, among them private school scholarships. Donors to state-approved nonprofits could get a tax credit for 70% of their donation. Then the organization could grant scholarships to low- and middle-income students. Scholarships would be limited to just under $6,000, and the total state payout for credits would be capped at $35 million a year. Kreisha says the ideas could make a big difference.
We know our achievement gap is made up of students that may not have gotten the best start in life. So let's target them specifically. Let's help them and give them more choices rather than less.
But critics worry these ideas are a backdoor way to siphon state money from public education, letting donors direct funds to private schools. Julie Schweitzer directs the College Readiness Consortium at the University of Minnesota. She says in addition to the $35 million in credits going to donors, it's also important to remember that school districts get funded per student.
Students are real money. And so it ultimately has a direct financial impact if more students who would have otherwise been in traditional publics move to privates.
Tax credits for scholarships are used in 17 states, according to the National Conference of State Legislatures. The Minnesota proposal would require less regulation than some. For example, some states require achievement tests for students who get scholarships. Kreisha's bill would not. He says the market would hold schools accountable if they don't use funds wisely.
I think the accountability lies with the parents, and I think if you look at the graduation rates of these schools and what they're doing with communities of color, you'll find that they're far surpassing many of the other benchmarks. So they're already doing a pretty good job. Let's just keep encouraging them.
Okay, so will they have to report any kind of state tests or graduation rates for the students who are getting the scholarship money?
I suspect if you have a school that does not have a high graduation rate or kids going off to college, they're probably not going to do very well and not be around long.
Private schools are exempt from testing requirements if they're accredited. There are also questions of access. The state's private schools are heavily concentrated in the Minneapolis-St. Paul metro area. Julie Schweitzer says low-income families also may not find out about the scholarships or be able to apply.
The early bird gets the worm, and if you're working two jobs and don't have internet, you're not always the early bird.
The bill also does not prohibit schools and scholarship-granting organizations from prioritizing students of a particular religion, which is another concern with critics. The bill would also need to pass through the Taxes Committee before heading to the floor. Its companion bill cleared a Senate committee last month. Covering education, I'm Solveig Wastvedt, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Two bills set to be introduced today at the Capitol would allow people to possess and smoke marijuana. It would be a dramatic expansion of the state's posture toward the drug, which is currently legal only in limited medical circumstances. Supporters see the measures as a conversation starter. Opponents say there's nothing to talk about, and they don't expect the bills to even receive a hearing. Brian Baxt has the story.
Second-term DFL Representative John Applebaum is realistic when it comes to the long odds he's facing.
You've got to start somewhere.
That somewhere is one of the bills to allow people to possess an ounce of marijuana and to regulate the cultivation and sale of the drug. There would still be limits on smoking it in public places. Employers could prohibit possession and consumption according to their workplace policies, and driving under the influence of the drug would still be a crime. And Applebaum notes, you'd have to be 21 or older.
At 21, you're legally allowed to drink alcohol. You should be legally allowed to safely consume marijuana.
Applebaum is deputy House Minority Leader, but made clear he wasn't staking out a caucus position with his bill. And even among supporters, there's a difference of opinion on strategy. DFL Representative Jason Metz of Virginia is sponsoring another bill. It has many overlapping features, except his proposal would leave the matter of recreational marijuana use to voters in the form of a constitutional amendment.
It would just be a choice that I believe voters need to look at themselves and decide whether Minnesota should be a state that participates like many others have recently done across the country and send a message to the federal government. And I think that it would be a better representation than just us here at the legislature to allow those voters that choice.
Democratic Governor Mark Dayton says he opposes making marijuana more accessible.
Well, I don't support it. We've got enough drugs, epidemic of drugs, floating through our society right now, and law enforcement's got to deal with all the consequences of it.
Dayton signed the state's restrictive medical marijuana law in 2014. The law makes the drug available in non-smokable forms to people with certain illnesses. The governor is unlikely to see a new bill hit his desk. Republican Representative Tony Cornish of Vernon Center is chairman of the House Public Safety and Security Policy Committee. He says he won't give the legislation a hearing.
The core objection to it is my 32 years of experience as a cop on the street and in the woods has shown me that marijuana is definitely a precursor to more serious drugs and law enforcement. People that have gone through the doors on warrants for hard drugs say that it always starts with marijuana. It's present at almost every scene.
Applebaum responds that making marijuana legal would free up police to focus on other crimes. Marijuana is legal for recreational use, or will be soon, in Alaska, California, Colorado, Maine, Massachusetts, Nevada, Oregon, and Washington. A few of those states had voter-approved initiatives last fall that won't kick in until 2018. Covering politics, I'm Brian Baxt at the Capitol.
Finally today, I mentioned this yesterday, Bill Cooper, the blunt-speaking banker who made TCF into a regional power and helped revive the state Republican Party in the 1990s, has passed away at the age of 73. Cooper was TCF's executive chair and CEO for nearly 30 years. Marty Moylan has more.
Bill Cooper was not your typical banker. He grew up blue-collar in Detroit. His father died when he was young, and his mother worked as a railroad clerk. During his college years, Cooper worked as a Detroit cop to help pay for his education. In a 2011 interview with NPR, Cooper described the banking business as a game, and he wanted to win.
Money's how you keep score, and I enjoy the competition the same way a lot of people enjoy tennis or golf, I guess.
He began his banking career at Michigan National Bank and joined the failing TCF in 1985. Banking consultant Bert Ely says Cooper was innovative and smart.
Bill, I think, gets a lot of credit for having turned around TCF during the S&L crisis. He saved the bank and, I think can be deemed to be have been a successful banker.
Ely says Cooper built TCF into a major regional bank, refining a business model based on innovations such as so-called free checking, supermarket branches, and Saturday hours, along with a heavy reliance on overdraft and maintenance fees. Cooper would often say his target customers were the Joe lunch buckets of the world. But one banking analyst once suggested the typical TCF customer paid so many fees, depositors wound up paying the bank instead of the other way around. Ely says Cooper was unapologetic about the business model.
It would be very expensive for those depositors who overdrew their accounts. But he was very upfront about the fees. I don't think there was any hiding of them. There was a certain segment of the population, bank customers, that were willing to do that deal with them.
But federal regulators have just accused TCF of hiding fees on Cooper's Watch. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau sued TCF last month, accusing the bank of tricking customers into signing up for costly overdraft services for debit card and ATM transactions. The watchdog agency said the fee revenue was so lucrative that Cooper had even named his boat Overdraft. The bank denies wrongdoing and promises a vigorous fight. Cooper fought back in one of the appellate court ruling against a snowmobile speeding ticket he received on Lake Minnetonka over a decade ago.
He was very principled, and he never really backed down.
Current TCF CEO Craig Dahl knew Cooper for nearly two decades.
He had reasons behind the things that he fought for, and I think that's that, and was not afraid to be unpopular because of it. And I think that is true leadership.
Cooper could be counted on to readily speak out on issues confronting his bank or industry, even when they put him at odds with regulators. And he certainly wasn't shy about his political beliefs. He gave hundreds of thousands of dollars to Republican causes. As party chair, he helped the GOP raise a record $5.3 million for the 1998 elections and also led Republicans to win a majority in the Minnesota House for the first time since 1984. And in 1999, interview with NPR, Cooper looked back on his days as party leader.
I think the biggest accomplishment was basically building a coalition of the social conservatives with the economic conservatives in Minnesota. And if you can bring them together, that's a majority of Minnesotans.
Former Governor Arne Carlson said Cooper was a black-and-white kind of thinker, and people might question Cooper's views and actions, but his integrity was unquestionable.
I would be stunned to hear anything untoward about Bill Cooper. I think he was deadly honest, deadly committed, and I just don't see him compromising his own sense of integrity.
Carlson said Cooper wanted to help impoverished children improve their lives through education, and Cooper had himself. Cooper was a strong supporter of charter schools. He sponsored schools and helped them raise money. St. Croix Preparatory Academy Director John Gutierrez says Cooper was instrumental in founding that Stillwater Charter School in 2004.
He wanted to provide an opportunity for students to have a rigorous education and to have an opportunity to pursue their dreams.
A memorial service for Cooper will be held in a few weeks. Martin Moylan, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's your Polycast for this Thursday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.